So it's to draw out of David this righteous indignation in this injustice that's done in David's kingdom and the need to make it right. But the surprise is that the finger is pointing to David. It's all about David and what David has done in his kingdom. Notice in verse 5, David's anger burned greatly against the man, and he said to Nathan, "As the Lord lives, surely the man who has done this deserves to die."
As we gather, may your spirit work within us. As we gather, may we glorify your name. Knowing well that as our hearts begin to worship, we'll be blessed because we came. We'll be blessed because we came.
Aloha kako e komo mai. Welcome to As We Gather, the Bible teaching ministry of Calvary Chapel Honolulu with Pastor Bill Stonebreaker. Today, Pastor Bill continues in 2 Samuel chapters 11 and 12.
We'll be blessed because we came. Yeah, we'll be blessed because.
It goes on, and so David, hear the intrigue, it deepens. David said to Uriah, "Stay here today also, and tomorrow I will let you go." So Uriah remained in Jerusalem that day and the next, and David called him, and he ate and drank before him, and he made him drunk. David got Uriah drunk. Are you losing some respect for David? I am, but I'm not going to get on my high horse. We'll get into this. But just in the natural, you lose respect for David and gain more respect for Uriah. But you see, we're not saved on our deeds, our own righteous deeds. We're not saved by that. And so, but we do see the contrast here. He made him drunk, and in the evening he went out to lie on his bed with his Lord's servants, and he did not go down to his house. So again, David stoops even lower to cover his sin. He plies alcohol on Uriah to get him drunk, again feeling maybe if he really gets drunk, really gets amorous, he'll go down and sleep with his wife, and then, you know, the pregnancy will be covered up. But you know what I see in this? You know, as I want to in the flesh, I want to get angry at David, and I want to go, "How could you?" You know, and as we go on, we're going to see David's murderous intents. We almost want to go and take David's head off. But that's just our flesh, isn't it? You see, God shows that in David, he shows in David what we're seeing right now is what is latent and lies within the heart, within every heart. Don't think that your heart's a lot more righteous than others. The Bible tells us that the heart is deceitful above all things, desperately wicked. Who can know it? There's none righteous, no, not one. You see, I want to get on my high horse, and I want to judge David. I want to put him down. I want to say, "How could you, David?" And I want to exalt Uriah. You see, that's what I want to do in the natural. I think all of us probably would want to do that. But the Bible says, in that you judge others, you condemn yourself, for you who judge practice the same thing. In Romans chapter 2, verse 1. You see, you just don't have the power, you don't have the opportunity, you don't have everything going for you to act on the temptation that comes your way. But if you did, do you really know how you would act and react? Would you be so pure and so above board? You see, we don't know our hearts, and we've got to be careful when we want to judge somebody else and put them down and get so angry and not realize, wait a minute, you have the same kind of heart, Bill, as any person that would do wickedness and even what David is doing. Bill, you're just not in that power position to do that. You don't have that ability. So here are you when judgment is left to the Lord. I see what David is doing, and it hurts my heart. It breaks my heart. But as I mentioned, you can choose your sin. You can't choose the consequence. When I look at what David has to endure, you know, after all is said and done, I go, man. And David hangs in there all the way with the Lord. I go, wow. Even though we see some egregious sin here, we see a man that holds on to the Lord like never before. And I'm thinking, man, if that ever happened to me, I don't know if I could hold on to the Lord, if I could be God's man like David was God's man. So I just say all that to caution all of us not to get too haughty and get too harsh with David. Oh, I'm harsh with that sin. But we have to realize latent within all of us, you know, what lies within all of us is a wicked heart, and the same kind of heart as David. Well, it goes on. Now, it came about in the morning that David wrote a letter to Joab and sent it by the hand of Uriah. And he had written in the letter saying, place Uriah in the front line of the fiercest battle and withdraw from him so that he may be struck down and die. So it was, as Joab kept watch on the city, that he put Uriah in the place where he knew there were valiant men. And the men of the city went out and fought against Joab, and some of the people among David's servants fell, and Uriah the Hittite also died. Now, here's Uriah. Notice David gives him a note. Basically, he's carrying his own death sentence in his hand, and he hands it to Joab. What a cruel, wicked, evil thing. What a horrible thing to do. And it's going to be fulfilled. I have to admit, this is speaking to me real loud and clear in the 21st century when I read the news. Because I have to say, I read the news and I can really get on my self-righteous high horse. You know, I read about what happened in Benghazi, you know, and how four, it seemed, were left to die for political expediency. You know, our ambassador there and three soldiers. And, you know, I get on my high horse, I can get really angry. But is this any better that David's doing? So I've got to be very cautious in the 21st century right now in my relationship with the Lord and how I deal with people and those that don't know the Lord and those that are doing things like David is doing, where the Lord tells me to pray for them. Don't judge them. Don't write them off, because you never know what God is going to do down the line. I have to leave the, you know, the circumstances and you know, what's going to go on with them in the future, whether, you know, they will come to a place of faith or whether they just fade off the scene and they'll have to face God in eternity. I don't know. But I know somehow when I read current things that are going on, when I look at ISIS beheading 21 Coptic Christians, you know, I think if I was God, I would just destroy each one of them. And I think my natural reaction is that. But then I have to think of Paul the Apostle. I mean, didn't he vote to kill Christians? Wasn't he like a vicious animal dividing families and voting for their death? And even, we don't know, but he, you know, he moaned, you know, he regretted the fact that he did, you know, even kill Christians. And even David, what he's doing to one of his greatest soldiers. So as much as we want to get angry with some of the things that are going on in the world, if we're not on our knees and fervently praying for these things, as much as we're reading about them and getting angry over them, I wonder if we're just doing our own thing and living our Christian life out in the flesh, or if it's really working a work of God and driving us to our knees and saying, God, have mercy on this land, or Jesus, come back quickly. Lord, deal with these. Lord, either turn the enemy on themselves or save them and let one of them be a Paul the Apostle and begin to, you know, do a work for you. You see, sometimes it's hard to know how to pray. But when I read things like this, you know, I just have to say, I get busted on this. He carries in his hand his own death sentence. And I have to think Joab, when he got this, the commander, he got this. Joab didn't know what was going on at this point. He thought, wow, Uriah must have really done something horrible. He must have really ticked David off, must have really offended him because he wants to put him in the front lines. Whatever he did, it must have really been bad. And then later, Joab's going to find out the real reason. Ah, I get it now. I get it now. So it's interesting story, verse 18. Then Joab sent and reported to David all the events of the war. And he charged the messenger, saying, when you have finished telling all the events of the war to the king, and if it happens that the king's wrath rises and he says to you, why did you go so near to the city to fight? Did you not know that they would shoot from the wall? Who struck down Abimelech, the son of Zerubbabesh? Did not a woman throw an upper millstone on him from the wall so that he died at Thebesh? Why did you go so near the wall? Then you shall say, your servant Uriah the Hittite is dead also. Ah, that'll placate David. Because David is a military strategist. He knows battle. He's the best at that. Military strategy. And he recognized what a foolish tactic to go so close to the wall when you knew that their warriors would shoot from the wall. Why did you do such a thing? And then basically all you have to say is, well, just tell him that Uriah died also. Ah, you know, that'll placate him. You see, the maneuver. And so in David's mind, he knew that that was the maneuver in the battle that would ensure Uriah's death. And so, you know, that calmed him down. You have to realize this. You know, sometimes we think, well, yeah, he committed adultery and he had Uriah murdered. But it also says other valiant warriors died. It was not just Uriah. It was other valiant warriors that died. Like Benghazi, you know. More died. David, what did you do? What did you do? When you're separated from God, you do a lot of crazy things, senseless things, evil things. And so, verse 22, the messenger departed and came and reported to David all that Joab had sent him to tell. And the messenger said to David, the men prevailed against us and came out against us in the field, but we pressed them as far as the entrance of the gate. Moreover, the archers shot at your servants from the wall. So some of the king's servants are dead, and your servant Uriah the Hittite is also dead. Then David said to the messengers, thus you shall say to Joab, do not let this thing displease you, for the sword devours one as well as another. Make your battle against the city stronger and overthrow it, and so encourage him. So David's basically saying, tell Joab not to beat himself up over this. There's casualties of war. You know, there's collateral, well, not collateral damage, but there's casualties of war. You know, and those valiant warriors in Uriah are just casualties. Tell him that and encourage him. The king understands, in a sense. Horrible thing, but it's what he says, verse 26. Now when the wife of Uriah heard that Uriah, her husband, was dead, she mourned for her husband. When the time of mourning was over, David sent and brought her to his house, and she became his wife. Then she bore him a son, and the thing that David did was evil in the sight of the Lord. You know, I just wonder if Bathsheba knew the plan that he had for her husband, Uriah. I just wonder if she knew that David was going to send him into the battle to die. Another part of deception. That's horrible. She might have known, not have known, but God did. And that's the important thing. No matter, you know, what you spin, you know, or how you spin sin, whatever face you put on it, whatever, however you dress up sin so it doesn't look so bad, in God's sight, it's evil. It's evil. And the man or the woman of God, that's all they should care about. Is this evil in God's sight? I'm not going to try to dress it up and make it look good. So we don't know if he told Bathsheba, but to God, it was evil. It was evil. And then in chapter 12, it's about 2 years from this time. The child is born, and the child is now a little bit older. We don't know how old, but you could figure it's about 2 years from the time of the events that took place in chapter 11 to chapter 12. And then the Lord sent Nathan to David, and he came to him and said, now, at this point, we don't know if people were talking. I think they would. They could count, you know, the number of months. They knew, you know, how long they'd been married. So I don't know if this was kind of something they didn't talk about. But someone said, secret sin on earth is open scandal in heaven. And this was a scandal in heaven. Whether they were talking about it here in David's kingdom or trying to keep this a secret, it wasn't a secret to God. And the Bible tells us God chastens those he loves. He disciplines every son and daughter he receives. And if you're without discipline, God says you're illegitimate. You're not his child. And so you could be sure if you stray from the Lord, because he loves you so much, he's going to discipline you to bring you back to him, because he doesn't want you out there. He doesn't want you to perish. He doesn't want you to live that carnal, that wilderness wandering in your Christian walk. He wants you to live an abundant life. And so here now we find God. Silence, there's been a separation, David and God, and now God is going to, notice he sends Nathan. He sends him. This is God's plan. This is the right time for David. And you know, I don't know if Nathan was really looking forward to this encounter with the king. You know, he's going to tell him about his sin. He had to be a brave prophet, Nathan. Because the terror of a king is like the roaring of a lion. You've ever heard, you know, a mean dog growl? It's kind of scary, isn't it? Well, can you imagine a lion? Ever been to the zoo? Heard a lion growl when he's hungry? Well, that's what Proverbs said. The terror of a king is like the growling of a lion. He who provokes him to anger forfeits his own life. That's Proverbs 20, verse 2. So I don't know if Nathan was going there with some trepidation, thinking, oh, I hope the king receives this, but this is the chastening and this is the revelation. He's going to give him a parable here or a story in story form to try to bring David to repentance. And so Nathan's there, and he says, there were two men, David, two men in the city, in your kingdom here, and one was rich and the other was poor. That's the last part of verse 1. Now verse 2 of chapter 12. And the rich man had a great many flocks and herds, and the poor man had nothing except one little ewe lamb, which he bought and nourished. And it grew up together with him and his children. It would eat of his bread and drink of his cup and lie in his bosom, and was like a daughter to him. Now a traveler came to the rich man, and he was unwilling to take from his own flock or his own herd to prepare for the wayfarer who had come to him. Rather, he took the poor man's ewe lamb and prepared it for the man who had come to him. Now, this was to elicit a response out of David. It's basically a parable. It's what Jesus often tells in the New Testament. And a parable, I mean, we've said it's an earthly story of a heavenly truth or of a spiritual truth. That's true, but literally that term means to set alongside. So he's using that story to set alongside of a true situation, David's situation, what David did. And so to set alongside, to illustrate a point, it's basically like a mirror. So David could see himself. It's not a window to see somebody else. It's a mirror to see David. It's to draw out of David, when David would hear this, this is happening, David, in your kingdom. The story goes, the rich man, the poor man. Rich man has much, poor man has hardly anything except this one little lamb he loves, like a daughter to him. Rich man takes it by force and slaughters it to feed the, you know, the stranger. So it's to draw out of David this righteous indignation that God knows lies within David in this injustice that's done in David's kingdom and the need to make it right. But the surprise is that the finger is pointing to David. It's all about David and what David has done in his kingdom. Notice in verse 5, and David's anger. Now, so it's eliciting, it's doing the right thing. David's anger burned greatly against the man, and he said to Nathan, as the Lord lives, surely the man who has done this deserves to die.
And that's where we'll finish on today's edition of As We Gather with Pastor Bill Stonebreaker. This was a portion of a weekly Bible study from the book of 2 Samuel, chapters 11 and 12. You can hear this message again by visiting CalvaryChapelHonolulu.com and take advantage of our media archive. We really appreciate any support from our listeners. Your encouragement and prayer go a long way for this ministry. If you'd like to support the As We Gather media ministry, you can give securely online at CalvaryChapelHonolulu.com. And for those who would like to be a regular sponsor, you can set up a recurring gift on the schedule of your choice. May the Lord richly bless you as you walk with Him today.
As we gather, may Your Spirit work within us. As we gather, may we glorify Your name. Knowing well that as our hearts begin to worship, we'll be blessed because we came. We'll be blessed because we came. As we gather, may Your Spirit work within us. As we gather, may we glorify Your name. Knowing well that as our hearts begin, we'll be blessed because we came. Yeah, we'll be blessed because we came. As we gather, may Your Spirit work within us. As we gather, may we glorify Your name. Knowing well that as our hearts begin, we'll be blessed because we came. Yeah, yeah, we'll be blessed because
next time on As We Gather, we'll continue in 2 Samuel chapters 11 and 12. Until then, aloha and agape.
We'll be blessed because we came. We'll be blessed because we came. Yeah, we'll be blessed because we came.